Here goes the ball burster.
Oh,
it's
yeah.
a goal! What a kick from Toby Green! Right on quarter time.
The Giants even up the ledger with a 36-point victory, while the Blues will return home from Sydney. Three straight losses, season finished, and some tough questions to answer.
Disappointing. I thought they smacked us around the ball, particularly the tackle count. Our ability to go in and win the ball from a ground ball point of view were okay. I think we won the ground balls, but after that, they just beat us. They tackled us. Their ability to get pressure on us with handball to someone else who was under pressure, and we couldn't get any clean ball movement going forward. And then when we had the opportunity to do that, we didn't use the ball well. We missed opportunities in front of goal. The shots we were getting weren't great, and I thought GWS's ability to use the ball and find free targets was far better than ours. The players are hurting, the coaches are hurting, and our fans have been really hurting. They've been so good to us. They stick by us. So we understand that it'd be frustrating for them right now, but we think if we continue to work hard, we've got to get better, but we think we've got that in us that... and I know they will. Our fans are very loyal, and particularly last year through the COVID, they are outstanding. So, we understand they're frustrated, and it's warranted because we're not performing the way that we should be.
The GWS Giants smack the Blues like the proverbial naughty children that they are. 2 points outside the eight now, and Carlton in their first game after announcing their mid-season review couldn't have put up a worse performance. They're in a real pit right now, says David Teague, asking Carlton fans to stick with us.
And Rosie plays on, bends it around, and makes them all look foolish.
Well, it's not the way Robbie Gray wanted to celebrate 250 by not taking much part in the game, but the ultimate team player, he'll enjoy the team victory. 50 points, the win today. They feast on another opposition below them. 12-9-81 to 4-7-31.
Really strong performance, playing against a team who were probably struggling, to be fair. We were able to come up and perform the way we wanted to perform. We knew there'd be some risk with them early because they'd come up with a poor performance. But I think we were pretty good early and started the game the way we'd like it. We got the scoreboard under control pretty quickly and managed to play the game out the way we'd like.
And if the club's under the pump, of course I'm under the pump. I mean, but that's, to be fair, like, that's every week. It's funny because people talk about, oh, are you under pressure? Well, every day, because you've got to make hundreds of decisions. We're looking after 50 lads, their staff. So as a club, we take it really seriously and really confident in our group of people that we're on the right track. We're working hard at it. But this notion of... if we sat here after the Hawthorn game and got asked that question... You actually never get asked that after a win, whereas the pressure's the same each week. Personally, maybe ask some of the other coaches, but I don't think it fluctuates as much as external. For me, it's always at a high level, a healthy level.
In Robbie Gray's 250th, Port Adelaide get a 50-point win and turn the Gold Coast Suns into the Black Hole Suns. Stuart Dew admits he's under the pump. That and a whole lot more to talk about. The poor crowds at Blundstone to see the Lions defeat the Roos in Fagan's 100th game, when there's a sellout looming today at Launceston between the Hawks and the Dogs. You're listening to Sunday Crunch Time, brought to you by the 3-litre Isuzu D-Max, born to play. Very good afternoon to you. Yes, indeed. Welcome to Sunday Crunch Time. So much to get through, and we'd love to converse with you all throughout the day. 0433 98 11 16, and on the socials at AFL Nation on Twitter. Our social feedback for Summit Internet, faster business internet. Sam Hargraves by name, joined by a stellar cast today for Sunday Crunch Time. He is the coach of Werribee, currently in the VFL, the three-time Ross Glendenning medalist, the greatest ever mature age recruit, it's safe to say. Michael Barlow, hello, mate.
Good to see you, Sam. Maddie and Dale, it's good to be in, and what a round of football already to dissect. And Dale's coming off a long run. He's ready to go.
You said you're coming off the long run about the Suns, so we're going to get to that. And introducing over 300 games, three All-Australians, if I'm not mistaken, one of my Bendigo brethren, Nick Dalsano. Hello, mate.
Are we up to the afternoon? Very good afternoon.
Yes.
Just ticked over. Very good afternoon to you all. Lovely
strong
to
start.
Be here. A very strong start. It's been a long weekend and a lot of things have happened. And I feel like we've got one game of football today, so we get to focus on something. But it feels like this has been one of the biggest weeks in football. You know, the defining moments in regards to the tribunal, a brilliant game of football in Geelong on Friday night with a kick after the siren. Then some interesting results yesterday, which we will get to. But looking forward to the next 6 or so hours with you all.
One of the greatest sets of tonsils in the game. Matty Hill, good afternoon.
Hello, Sammy. Well, I tell you what, Daisy Pierce last week said we were the twos. I reckon this week we're just looking, we're just nudging for number
foods.
One selection.
Oh, we're going up.
No, we're going up. There's no doubt about that.
What about Nicky Del Santo? He was with the seniors yesterday in Saturday crunch time.
It's rubbing off already. He's
and
been
I don't
here
know
five
whether
minutes.
They weren't happy with his performance or I don't know whether they thought he just needed to provide a bit extra, but he's on double duty going in the seniors and the reserves.
And like the modern world and like the AFL world, no communication off the back of the performance yesterday. I was just told, hey, you need to front up again and just get your work boots on.
We might get Jared Waitley on just to give us a 360 style analysis of Dallas.
Not again. I'm getting a cold sweat over here.
All right, let's jump straight into this. So plenty to talk about throughout the course of the day. We'll catch up with Willem Drew, who had a career-best day yesterday in Port Adelaide's 50-point win over the Suns. 27 disposals for him, 10 clearances as well. Throughout the course of the afternoon, Blake Carosella will join us, Essendon assistant coach. Aren't we all very, very impressed with where they're at in their rebuild? They get some players back today. They're at Tasmania for the first time since 1992 when they went down there under Kevin Sheedy and played Fitzroy. So it's been a long time since the Dons have been in the Apple Isle. So Blake Carosella will talk to us about their preparation. Rob McCartney, Hawthorn's new head of footy as well. So we've got a stellar lineup today. But as always, we'll kick off with the Sunday Crunch brought to you by the 3-litre Isuzu D-Max Born to Play. And we can't not start off with the Carlton Footy Club. So as I mentioned in the opener, this is their first game after announcing a full football department review. So for Mickey Barlow, for Nick Del Santo, when that gets announced, what would be at the very least you'd be expecting from a playing group in terms of response?
This is complex. This is complex. So there's multiple layers and multiple ways to look at this. So the first thing I hear from when you put your players hat on, Matty, is, and this says gets said all the time, your responsibility as an AFL player as it currently stands is to perform on the weekends. All this outside noise, whatever it may be, and clearly the review is the talk of the town at the moment for the Blues, but that shouldn't make any difference. This is what players say to themselves, Mickey, and join in when you're free. So you think from a player's perspective, I prepare, I play, we win, recover. It's just a constant cycle. And at times it gets a bit monotonous, but that's just the reality of it. So I would assume that they are saying those sort of things within their playing group. Within the leadership group, guys, it's another week. The guys that are responsible for taking care of the off-field stuff will take care of that. Our job is to prepare and perform on the weekends. Now, clearly they haven't been doing that, and there's enough reasons and examples, particularly in the last few weeks, Mickey, to probably show why they're not getting the outcomes that they want. Not that they deserve, that they want. Mm. So that's what they're saying. But the reality is it filters through in your subconscious, in the whispers, in your family asking you about it, in reading the paper, grabbing a coffee at your local cafe, wherever it is, this is what is getting spoken about. So it does seep through at some point.
Yeah, absolutely, Dal. And he's summed it up brilliantly. So he started well in the reserves today, hasn't he? And I've been listening to Dal for a long time. And you talked recently about Collingwood when Nathan Buckley was going out. And you were asked the question, would you expect to see a lift from the players this week? And naturally, I think the neutral observer thinks, yeah, they should because it's the last game. You've just summed it up brilliantly because that is the effort that is required to be an AFL athlete and a professional athlete from a weekly standpoint. Mm. Another great point you made was everyone wants to be good. Everyone likes the idea of playing finals and going to the big time and, you know, watching grand finals. Everyone gets jealous. But realistically, there's only the two teams that put it all on the line for the longest period to get that opportunity. And Carlton strikes me as that club at the moment that like the idea of being the big club, having the big supporters, having the big backing, playing on the big stage, but they haven't got the sacrifice and what actually comes with being hard-nosed pros day-to-day. And it's telling in their effort. Mm. You'll see throughout all the footy shows this week, they'll go behind the goals and show some efforts. Show some efforts where it just becomes too hard. It's too hard. Yeah, lucky dip footy, and it told in the end last night.
But you two as players, how embarrassing is this stat? And when it comes up, it is the shameful. They were minus 39 in disposals, and they were still minus 38 in tackles. How does that happen? At halftime, I think there were 12 players that hadn't laid a tackle. And David Teague spoke about the fact that the defence system
it wasn't quite connected. He said it was part system and part player buy-in. He said he even put an extra number behind the ball and they still were able to take marks inside forward 50. And then he spoke about the fact that when they need to review this, they'll have honest, accountable feedback. They'll need to work hard. And then he said the most important thing, the players will need to buy in.
Drop them.
Yes.
Oh, I'm being said, drop them.
Yeah.
We have heard this. Carlton supporters have been hearing this for so long. There's no integrity of selection. And you're right, Mick, we'll see multiple, plenty of examples from behind the goals footage, which is the worst thing in the world as a player, because they can spot you from a mile away and they can identify what you did and what you didn't do. There's no accountability in selection. So you would love to have those meetings. But the reality is, if you're not performing to the level, Mick, and you're spot on, you have to sacrifice something to get what you want. And they're not prepared to do it as it currently stands.
This is David Teague on the tackling.
Yeah, the tackling intensity, yeah, that was definitely, we picked a tough team. We thought we picked our tougher team. We thought that to beat GWS, you've got to be strong in the contest and win the ball, but then also tackle them and pressure them. And they beat us in the tackles, and then they beat us on the outside with their uncontested marks. So our ability to connect and defend as one wasn't good enough. And then also when they went forward, they were able to take some, we had an extra behind the ball, and they were still able to take some contested marks and got some good looks on goal. So, yeah, I think that we've had a few disappointing ones, but that's right up there. It was very hard. It was very frustrating to watch.
And what did you say to the players about the lack of tackling pressure? Because at halftime, I think the stat was 45 to 20 and you had 12 players that hadn't even laid a tackle in that time.
Yeah, we talked about it. We highlighted. We showed an example of just one stoppage where we actually won it. Our inability just to use the ball correctly with the first gives forced us to get tackled. And then when we had our chance, we didn't have the same intent on them. I thought their pressure was very good. And that's a mindset. We need to get better at it. It's been a constant for us. And we always like to balance the inside and the outside. And they beat us in that area today convincingly. And it's something it's really disappointing because we felt we picked we brought in Kennedy, Fogarty, Luke Parks, and we thought they were all strong in the tackling and competing area. So we need to continue to look at that and make sure we've got everyone buying in because today we didn't.
So that was Carlton coach David Teague. So we know the minus 38 in tackles, and they were minus, I think, about 8 in 1%. Is the other thing that stands out in terms of not just tackling but work and effort, when you look at the top sort of 5 or 6 players in kilometres covered, there's only one Carlton player in there, and that's Sam Walsh, who worked his butt off. He had De Boer running with him, a man you know very well, Michael Barlow. He limited him to 20 touches. De Boer then switches and goes to Cripps and kept him to 4 handballs. But 15 Ks for Taranto, then Walsh had 15, but Whitfield, Kelly, Haynes. So that's not. It wasn't just the pressure around the ball. It was the work rate up and down the ground.
Yeah, spot on. And just to explain that, so it is very simplistic to look at it, and it is accurate to say, how can one team have so much more of the football, yet they have more tackles than the opposition? So you look at the numbers. So the Blues had +2 in contested possession. They were down by a few in clearances. So there's your contested situation where you're all pretty much stationary, where you don't have to spread. You don't have to work. You don't have to make decisions about coming forward to support or making a decision about, am I going forward or am I retreating in and going back into defence? On the flip side, so they're +2 in a contested situation. They're -43 on the outside, uncontested possession. So what that says to me is when it's in nice and tight, the Giants were able to put pressure on. Therefore, they had 79 tackles. And that's just in those moments. But they've had 79 for the game. But as soon as it gets on the outside, who's prepared to run? Who's prepared to spread? Who's prepared to support a teammate run shotgun just in case they might need you there for support? That is why you have 41 tackles. As soon as it gets out of that contested situation, they're not seen.
But does it concern you when you hear the coach say the players aren't buying in? There seems to be some sort of issue there.
It's bad language.
It's a disconnect, as he said. But if they're not willing to try, there must be some issue that's just bubbling away there.
And it sounds to me, Matty, as if they went with a plan, clearly went with a plan, knowing you play the Giants and you want to play an uncontested game, you're no chance. You're no chance because of the way they use the ball. If you don't lay a glove on Whitfield, you don't lay a glove on Taranto, they're just going to slice you to bits like they did last night. So 41 tackles is a recipe for disaster. David Teague, is he clear enough in his messaging? Because he did say, we want to go and play a more contested brand. We need to play a contested brand against this, but we also want to do some stuff on the outside to expose them. Is that group sitting there just thinking, hearing what they want to hear? Oh, I like the idea of this outside thing. Mm. I like the idea of this outside thing, getting them on the outside, exposing them that way. But the real the anxiety-riddled aspect of the contest and tackling in AFL football that they just didn't come to do.
And as you were saying, Nick, about how this issue of the internal review is seeping through the players' lives, surely they go to training on a daily basis or get on a football field and they feel like they've got this Damocles just hovering over them. Oh, I'm next to go under the hammer. So that can't be a good thing for a player's confidence.
No, you're right. But players live this year in, year out. So the only players that feel comfortable are those that are performing and have a contract probably the following year or
winning.
For winning. And I've been in this situation multiple times, I'm sure Mick has as well, where you have that feeling of whether your club's going well or not, that you go, I need to perform. I need to perform because if I don't, then ultimately I don't get to play seniors week in, week out. So therefore, I need to have my backyard clean. I need to get enough of the football. I need to look like my stats at the end of the day are undroppable. I want to be in that position where I can point the finger at others and no one can do it to me. But off the back of that as well, Matty, is when your club's under pressure, they probably haven't actually changed their actions, the Blues yesterday, to what they were for the previous 12 or 13 weeks. They've been flimsy the whole time. So and I'm not trying to contradict myself, but maybe that hasn't changed at all for them because that is who they have been this whole time.
So David Teague was asked the question, where do you feel like the team's improved under your coaching?
Oh yeah, there's been some real growth. Unfortunately, it's probably been a little bit more from an individual point of view, and as a collective, our ability to execute as a whole has probably dropped away. I think we're not playing with the confidence and belief that we had when I first took over. There was an energy and a belief. I thought at the end of the third, start of the fourth, that they were starting to come back, and I was starting to see that energy and up on their toes. So that's our challenge. We need to make sure that we can bring energy and play the way we want to play all the time, regardless of the scoreboard, regardless of what's going on around us. We need to be able to take ownership of the game and make it happen. And that might be by tackling at times and limiting opposition's damage, but then also winning the ball and getting it forward and using the ball well. So we've got a fair bit of work to do. Our ball use wasn't good enough tonight, our finish, and then definitely our defence is probably our biggest growth area.
So we spoke about there the honeymoon period when he took over the substitute teacher, which we've spoken about before. I've banged on about the difference between the substitute teacher and the full-time teacher. But the surprising thing about this, Michael Barlow, is that this wasn't a coach that was forced upon the playing group. This is a coach that the playing group fought so hard for. So how do you fight so hard for the coach and get the coach you want and then not buy in to what you're being asked to do?
There's an element outside looking in. There's an element of entitlement from that playing group in terms of this is good. Yeah, he's come in. He's telling us what we want. Mm. You know, we've had the coach go. Bolton, it was at the time the coach go, and this is fresh. This is new. It's the sugar hit, isn't it? That's one of Gerard Whateley's favourite. The sugar hit that you get. You get a result. Players feel good. That sugar hit. You know, if you drink too much alcohol, you have too much sugar. How do you feel after some time? Mm. Not too good. I need a change. I need something fresh to come in and cleanse me and make me feel better. And I think that's, at this stage, the clear disconnect is, and the murmurings externally are, that there's a disconnect between coaching group, administration and playing group.
Can I put one to you, Mick? You are a current coach. Mm. So what we've just heard there from David Teague is almost admitting, well, he is admitting that the group aren't buying into whatever he is, the messaging that he's giving. So a lack of effort, and then a lack of the mechanics, which the basics of mechanics is to put players in a position where they can execute a role at the best of their ability. So there is obviously a disconnect in that part. If you've got players that aren't giving maximum effort at VFL level, let alone at AFL level, which is another step up, how do you communicate to them? How do you change that? And ultimately, do they play? Mm. I don't care who it is. I'm asking across the board. Your best player through to player number 35.
Mm. Yeah, it's a great question. It's something I'll add for you, and I'll come back to you afterwards. From my point of view, the way I coach is I'm incredibly lucky to have had some great coaches that essentially brought it back to effort, and they actually gave visible examples of what effort looked like. And if you gave that effort, yes, we can fix up the mechanics and a bit of skill and this and that and have that discussion, but at the core of it has to be effort. My take on it is you've got to really laud the ones that do show effort. And Carlton have absolutely got players that show effort, so show the vision of them, lord them, give them the awards, get them up in front of the group to the point where you're nearly embarrassing them. But then what you are doing is exposing those in the group room that are, I'm feeling a bit uncomfortable here because I'm not up there. And it's a not so hidden message from coach to playing group that some are picking to do it and some aren't. And my one to you, Dale, is that period You know, it was highly publicised at the time when you went back to Casey, I think it was, from St Kilda. Ross put you back. He's just rolling his eyes to have a think about it. I don't think it might have only happened once.
Our only mistake Ross Lyons ever made as a coach. That's
but
correct.
On the back of it, you said your numbers look good. So a lot of these Carlton players, their numbers look okay.
Yep.
Like they look untouchable. Saving yourself. You pad your stats, you get your numbers up, but you deep down know, well, there's probably something I'm not doing here. What was your specific example?
There's giving effort and then there's giving maximum effort.
Unconditional, isn't it?
Unconditional, without question. And you go into self-survival mode. There's no doubt about that. And you can see physical examples of the Blues yesterday calling for the ball when they weren't in position, running past for a handball when they knew that they were going to be under pressure, but they ultimately get a touch, keeping the ball in on the boundary line when it is not the best thing for the team at that particular time. You are able to take it over, reset, but you just get a little squeezy handball in. All of those things to me show signs of desperation that I need to just make sure that my backyard is clean. And I went through it, Mick. There's no doubt about it. I felt like I was battling. I felt like for me to stay in the team at that time, and I was a senior player, but I felt like I just needed to make sure that I was getting enough of the football. And it wasn't what the team needed at that particular time. I dropped off in my training for a period of time. And the reason I love Ross, and I do make a bit of a joke about him, and I'll love him forever. Honest as the day is long, and looked me in the eye and said, hey, this isn't cutting it at the moment. Went back and played reserves based on effort. Like you just said, he goes, I don't care how much football you get. I can't remember how much I got. I don't think it was a heap. Came back in the next week and everything had changed.
Let me ask you this then, because from everything we're told, players really, really like David Teague, really, really like him, get along fantastically. How much does a coach need to be a friend, but how much do they need to be a figure of authority? Like, what's the right balance? Did Ross have the balance? You both played under him.
Yep.
Did he have the right balance between authoritative, dictator, but also developer? Was he a friend, or was he what was Ross Lyons?
All of the above.
Yep.
And he was every one of them at different times at the appropriate time. Mm. Ross was as supportive as a coach as I've ever had in my life. Really empathetic, family, knew everything about those sort of areas of your life, which a lot of people wouldn't know. But you'd also walk past Ross Lyons' office and be a little bit nervous at times.
That's great, isn't it? That's
just a little bit of trepidation, thinking, oh, he might call me in here for a chat. But on the flip side, you could also have the weeks where you'd say, Ross, you got a minute? He goes, I've got 10 for you. Yeah. Come on in, let's chat.
Yeah.
He's got some great examples from my time with him, and Dale summed it up really well. That sense of having him as a friend, it was minimal. Like, the percentage-wise was minimal, but you're right, he made that apparent to you behind closed doors. Some of his great quotes, my door's always open. And that sounds like a bit of a throwaway line, but his door was always open to the point. And then he'd always pick up on little cues. Like, you'd walk past, he'd just know something's up and be like, right, you and I, my door's open. And it's not saying come and see me, but it's saying come and see me. And then you walk in and you're feeling nervous and anxious, but you walk out feeling like a truckload of weight's been lifted off your shoulders. So I know, the David Teague situation, he's a fantastic person. And he's, they're the hardest jobs in Australia, essentially, aren't they? Coaching an AFL club. And he's going through the whirlwind of it now. He needs his players to buy in publicly and get right behind him. And show some unity whilst the world's crashing down around them.
So the hardest part for these football teams, and I reckon we're going to talk about a couple more, such as North Melbourne and the Gold Coast in this hour as well. You mentioned the word, Mickey, entitlement, and you said, Nick, drop them. But when you've got football teams with no depth, it's really tough.
I want to look at their twos yesterday. So they had Casbolt, Murphy, Cottrell's played a bit of footy now. He's come up. So they've got a big gut. Like the one is the depth. The depth is an interesting one. Matt Kennedy came in. He was their unconditional player last night. He was effort. He was tackle. He was contest. He was outside. And he's a guy scrapping and clawing.
Mm.
So yes, there's not a huge amount down there. There is some numbers down there, but like the Dal Sano Milne situation, probably 12, 13 years ago now. It's a long time ago, but people remember that. They're really landmark moments. Is it Zach Williams? Is it Jack Martin? They're the statements that are memorable and can shift behaviours.
Matt Rendell wrote a fantastic article in The Age when he looked at their list with a deep dive, and he pointed to the fact that if you look at Geelong, even up to an old list, their top 10 players, so their over 28s are still in their top 10 players. Richmond's over 28s are still in their top 10 players. He said maybe Kerno of the over 28s at Carlton are in their top 10 players. And that's an issue in terms of who you can rely on week in and week out and their leadership out on field as well. So it's very much worth a read of where Carlton are at. This article of Matt Rendell's is absolutely bang on the money. And there's not many better at analysing a list. We will keep talking about Carlton. The ladder for 40 winks will do. This is Crunch Time, brought to you by the powerful 3-litre turbo Isuzu D-Max. No matter the adventure, the Isuzu D-Max is born to play. Willem Drew from Port Adelaide up next.
Crunch Time, brought to you by the powerful 3-litre turbo diesel Isuzu D-Max. No matter the adventure, the Isuzu D-Max is born to play.
It was a lengthy Sunday crunch brought to you by the 3-litre Isuzu D-Max, born to play. We will get back to talking about the Giants. A couple of people off the text, 0433 98 11 16, talk about the Giants. We absolutely will, because they were sensational yesterday. They dished out Carlton's biggest loss for the year. They're just 2 points outside the eight now, and we've got to talk about Toby Green, one of the stars of the game, and he was exceptional yesterday. And when anyone bangs a torp 67.5 metres, that deserves to be on the agenda. And it will be, I promise you. We'll also talk about North Melbourne and Brisbane from yesterday. And, of course, the Gold Coast Suns and where they're at. But Port Adelaide had a job to do yesterday, gents. Michael Barlow, Nick Del Santo, Matty Hill here for Sunday Crunch Time, brought to you by the 3-litre turbo diesel Isuzu D-Max. No matter the adventure, the Isuzu D-Max is born to play. They needed a win to stay in touch with the top four. They briefly jumped in and then were knocked out on percentage when Brisbane got the win over North Melbourne. Willem Drew had a career best day, 27 disposals. He had 10 clearances as well in Robbie Gray's 250th, which ended sadly with him straining a medial. We're waiting to see on where that's at. Scans today for Robbie Gray. But a 50-point win to the Suns, and Willem Drew has been good enough to jump on the line. Willem, hello to you.
Hello, thanks for having me on.
It's an absolute pleasure. Nice to be up in the sunshine yesterday, and certainly nice to be able to put together such a comprehensive win as you did.
It was. It was a perfect day for footy. I think it was 20 degrees up there, and really nice day for it. And yeah, I think we got off to a good start, and that probably led into the game. And we did what we had to and get the win, especially for Robbie. Unfortunately for him, with a bit of a medial strain, but to get the win for someone like him who's done so much for the club in his 250th, it was a massive day.
Will and Mick Barlow, you just mentioned Robbie Gray. I'll jump into that. He's a pretty special player, isn't he? He's being rated as the most special Port Adelaide player across their history. He's quite reserved, isn't he, and quite introverted. Can you shed some light on how special he actually is and in perfecting his craft?
Yeah, as you said, he is a pretty shy sort of person. I think when he does speak and everyone is there, everyone listens, and just the amount of talent that he has around stoppages and the way he reads the game, it's just really remarkable. And I've been at the club for 5 years now, and he's definitely the best player that I've seen. And I think just what he does for the young boys and everything else that he does for his game, it's just first class.
Willem, tell us about the last month or so. You've had some really good performances and some performances that the coaches probably felt just subpar. Look, going into the game yesterday, and it's easy for us on the outside to say, well, it should be a comfortable win for Port. What are you focusing on, and has that focus changed for what you guys ultimately think will work at the end of the year?
Well, the focus hasn't really changed too much. We went into the game wanting to work on our contested possession and getting our pressure around the footy, which I think we executed well in the first half. We probably went a little away from that in the second half, but I think we're definitely building towards the way we want to play, and we know where we want to get to, and that's in the top four. And if we can keep building in the second half of the year, I think we can get there.
What are those areas that you believe that need to improve? And you've played some really good teams, as I said, in the last month or so. So you've seen the best. What needs to improve from here to get to ultimately where you want to get to?
Yeah, we've spoken a little bit just on basic sort of skill errors that have cost us on turnover, and the opposition have scored the other way. So that's been a big one. And I think in Allen, just being able to handle the heat that the other teams bring, especially the top four teams, being able to handle that pressure, and be able to execute under pressure.
Willem, how much are you enjoying a good run in the midfield? A lot was made of your role throughout the early parts of this year about going to an opposition mid, learning a bit and working off, and now you're starting to craft out some really good midfield minutes and midfield numbers on your own right.
yeah, I'm pumped just to be back playing. I missed last year through injury, and I'm just really happy to be back playing and training and things like that. And yeah, I suppose for me, I was working on being a sort of defensive player, but also trying to have a bit of impact on the game. And I suppose I've struggled with that a little bit over the year, but Scully, the midfield coach, has been really, really good to me. And he said, yeah, just keep doing the things you're doing, and it'll turn, and you'll be able to have a bit more impact on the game as well as doing that defensive work.
I'm interested on this midfield group and loving Ollie Wines. He had 43 disposals yesterday, and I think he's improved. And when you watch him either live or on TV, you can actually see his spread. And we were talking about the effort outside of a contest, Willem, earlier about other clubs and their lack of. And I look at Ollie Wines and think he's a great example of someone that has improved this. As you're standing around a stoppage and you've got so many good inside ball users or ball winners, who gets priority? And what's the communication like around a stoppage for who ultimately gets the tap?
It's pretty shared, to be honest. I think you spoke about Ollie there. He's had an unbelievable season so far. And he's one of those players who's really unselfish as well. He's not the one always going hit to. He's always trying to involve other people. He brings people into the game with handballs and different things like that. And we've also got Boakey in there who's having another great season as well. So I suppose those two are the main leaders in the midfield, and the rest of us sort of just follow along, and they're both great leaders.
Must be nice to see Connor Rosie back up his performance from last week as well. It looks like he's found some form after a quieter start to the year by his lofty standards.
Yeah, definitely. I think he's kicked 8 goals in the last 2 weeks, or it might even be more, but he's a special player and a super talent, and I think he's definitely happy with the way he's going at the moment, and hopefully he can continue that.
Willem, there's not a heap of names when it comes to AFL players drafted from Koroit. Would you say that comfortably now you are the best player ever to come out of Koroit, or are you going to defer to Martin Gleeson?
Marty is my cousin, so...
oh, well, there you go.
First cousin, so he's definitely ahead of me, and my uncle Adrian Gleeson as well. He's probably up there from a while ago. So,
yes.
There's definitely a few, Joe McLaren and a few others as well.
And Willem, they win premierships for fun in the Hampton Footy League. I think they've won the last 6, of which, funnily enough, I played in a losing one against Koroit recently. Port Adelaide looking to go up and take it to the next level prelim last year. Surely you're rolling in with this Koroit experience and knowledge and telling Ken how it is actually done to get to the next level.
I don't think I'll be doing that, to be honest. I did see that you played against Koroit 2 years ago, and I think you ended up with a broken nose, actually. So yeah. I didn't see that.
But, that's a far better story.
And Willem, the bloke that did it, is now deregistered. He got about 100 weeks for the incident, so continue.
Oh, wow.
No, but yeah, continue.
That wasn't another cousin of yours, was it, Willem?
Yeah, was that another cousin?
No, that was not a relation, no.
Mate, it's been sensational having you on, and it's been a big few weeks for Port Adelaide. Obviously, the games against the Cats and the Bulldogs weren't quite to your liking and where exactly you want it to be, but it's a really important stretch that you've got coming up at the moment. Next week, you get Swans. To hopefully head home and play the Swans, which is another tough top 8 battle. So I know you guys will prep well and get the job done, hopefully for your Port Adelaide fans. Mate, thanks so much for being with us on Sunday Crunch Time.
No worries at all. Thanks for having me on.
Willem Drew, part of Port Adelaide's dominant midfield in a 50-point win over the Gold Coast Suns. We'll talk about the Suns in greater detail. But one of the criticisms for Port Adelaide had been this year, are they deep enough in the midfield? And with no Butters out of the side still for a little while, and Dersma as well, Willem Drew is playing a really important role. So 27 yeah. touches, 10 clearances. Led all comers for clearances yesterday. So when you can bring them along like that, it's makes life a little bit easier.
He balances out their midfield. And this is the beauty of the very best midfields in the competition. And maybe Port are in that conversation. Maybe they're just out the top couple of best midfielders. But you think about ball winners. You think about those players that start on the inside and love to get on the outside. Someone's got to defend and have that balance around a stoppage. And I think Willem's done a brilliant job. Speak about tagging at different times. Mickey, whether he starts off the game as a tagger or, as we like to call him now, just the cooler. If someone's getting away from the opposition, You've got Drew there ready to go that you can just put on him. He also had 7 tackles. So you speak about the 10 clearances, which is enormous. But he's happy to go get the opposition if they've got it as well. So he's had 7 tackles, which was the most for Port Adelaide yesterday as well. So he just balances out their midfield.
He's a pure footballer, isn't he? And he's the type that can come in and add that depth that you alluded to, Sam. The watch this space will be on Port Adelaide. You know, what was it, 8-9 days earlier, they played Geelong and have a little mishap, and then the questions get really raised around their depth and those players that are underperforming on the big stage. So, yes, it is a little bit more comfortable to go off Broadway, go to the Gold Coast and get it up and going. Players like Motlop had a nice day yesterday. You know, Powell Pepper contributed more yesterday. So then the test now comes. You know, Sydney next week, where does that see them? But when they're those top 4 sides, they need those depth players to amp themselves up.
We still haven't seen Charlie Dixon really grab hold of a game this year. I thought, and his name just evades me at the moment, and I apologise, it wasn't Burgess.
Georgiadis?
No,
the player. Sons. Charlie the sons. Ballard.
No, it wasn't Ballard for the whole game, was it?
Caleb Graham?
Yes. Thought he did a fantastic job and was a positive. So that's still up their sleeve for Charlie to grab hold of one.
Big Chuck's going to rip one apart soon.
Very soon.
And he was very candid pre-game yesterday in an interview. I think it was on Fox where he said, I'm nowhere near where I need to be or where I want to be. And we saw him at his very best last year, All-Australian centre-half forward, clunking him, enormous. But if nothing else, be the presence. Be the contested. Doesn't have to be the mark. Just contest everything in that forward half. I'm still on him. I don't think he's that far away from ripping this apart the back half of the year.
Defence looks really settled. They might. Sometimes the question is, are they undersized against the teams that have got the 3-prongers?
Tomahawk has had a bit of field day.
Of the likes, and Tomahawk has got a hold of him on a couple of occasions. But Trent McKenzie's only played the 4 games, but he's averaging, I think it's 6.5 intercepts, 6.5 rebounds. He goes at about 93% of efficiency. Played an important role yesterday and actually played taller and allowed Alir to have the 10 intercepts and run off and create and be able to be the third man up. So where have you got them situated, Dell? And it's an impromptu power rankings, but pardon the pun, but fifth is exactly where they are is where they're at.
It's where they should be right now. I think Port, as much as any other team in the competition, have the most upside from here.
Okay.
From what we know that they could do in regards to execute week in, week out with some individual players that have got a lot of improvement with them, Charlie Dixon being the main one, I see them as having the most upside from where they sit right now to the remainder of the year.
Do you agree with that, Mickey?
I would, with Butters, Dersma, the X factors are out. Does Butters come back? It's quite a unique injury. So I think, they are right where they should be at the moment. Fifth, I think the top 4 are the ones to chase down. That's just stating the obvious.
Beautifully done. Still plenty more to work through. We will put the Suns on the agenda. We're going to talk about the Giants next. They just have to win, and win they did yesterday. 36 points over the Blues, who we've spoken about at length, but let's look at the positive out of that game yesterday, and that was the Giants getting within 2 points of the top 8. You're listening to Sunday Crunch Time, brought to you by the powerful 3-litre turbo, turbo diesel, Isuzu D-Max. No matter the adventure, the Isuzu D-Max is born to play. Sam Hargraves, Mickey Barlow, Nick Del Sando, and Matt Hill with your Sunday Crunch Time. Quick look at the ladder for 40 winks. Any size mattress is the price of a single at 40 winks. The Giants, after that win yesterday, just 2 points outside the 8. And when you have a look at percentage, would it have made a difference if they had have been able to get that win over North Melbourne? The short answer is no. 97.6%. Tigers in 8th, 105.3 with a bye this week. So the Tigers hang on to 8th position. West Coast in 7th. Sydney on 32 points as well in 6th. And then the two teams on 36 points, Port Adelaide and Brisbane, just separated by 6% of percentage. And then the top 3, Melbourne, Western Bulldogs and Geelong. So yesterday, the Giants, I mean, it's a simple equation for the Giants. We were expecting at this time of the year, and the stats would tell us that maybe one team comes out of the 8. And at the moment, obviously, it's probably the Captain Obvious statement of the year. But they're the next in line, given they are 9th and just 2 points out. So they just have to win, and it's as simple as that. Michael Barlow, what impressed you about the way that they went about it yesterday? 36-point win over Carlton. Their starts had been poor. They corrected that yesterday.
And it's the contrary to the Carlton discussion, isn't it? They come and lay 79 tackles, and we know what they do with ball in hand and how silky and smooth they are on the outside, but they came to work. They came with the physical intent early and owned the game. And from there, Carlton playing catch-up. they were able to own the game. Carlton had their moments, but the maturity as well of a Toby Green-led Giants, and we spoke off-air about just that maturity of the group, off the back of Toby Green's maturity, of which, you know, 2 or 3 years ago, everyone was questioning, you know, is he a rat bag? Is he counterproductive in that space? And it is, couldn't be further from the truth, couldn't it?
Well, just before you go, Del, the Toby Green game, it's a Swamp Thing who's still the only
Your
reason.
Man? Well, he's the only
reason I still have a Twitter account is so I can read to Swamp Thing. It's Toby Green's fourth game this year where he's had 17-plus disposals and kicked 4 goals. The next best is 2. So he's done it 4 times this year where he's winning the footy but also kicking the goals that matter. And that torp was 67.5 metres on the measure inside the centre square. That's goal of the week. Don't even bother trying to put another one up.
Don't even turn up today, you
Do
think?
Do not
Hawks,
even
Bombers
bother.
Don't bother?
Nope. No okay. point. That's it. That's done.
No man in the competition. And I'm a massive fan of Toby Green. And I know he has his indiscretions. And Mickey used the word before. Is he a rat bag? Yeah, he is. And that's what makes him actually good, that he's not by the book, that he pushes the limits, that he is prepared to do something a little bit outside the line or outside of the rules as it currently stands.
But does that make him a better player? If you tied him back and said you can't do that sort of stuff, would that stop him playing his best football?
It's trying to put a lion in a cage.
Yeah.
They don't want to be there. They want to roam. They want to make it up as they go. I remember interviewing Toby Green. It would have been 4 or 5 years ago post-game. And they were playing it in Canberra. And I asked Toby, he had a fantastic game. And I tried to get into his mind a little bit. And I said, how do you anticipate where the ball is going, knowing that you ultimately beat your opponent? He's playing as a forward by 3 or 4 metres. And he said, I don't know. I just do it. And what that said to me was he plays on instinct. And these sort of players, defensively, you can put them in positions to help the team defence. But offensively, don't tell them how to play. If you feel like kicking a tort from 65, I know it was after the siren, you didn't have many other options. Go for it. No other man in the competition of his stature, so I'm talking about height and weight, walks with more swagger, that has more influence.
Takes more contested marks.
And supports his teammates like Toby Green does. And I know he's not everybody's cup of tea, but if he was on your team, you would love to look him in the eyes as you walk out onto the ground and you know what you're going to get from him every single week.
Love him. Don't like the fact that he sort of reverted in a little moment. A little brain fade yesterday, which won't be excused, but... in a week where we've tried to suspend David McKay when he didn't break a single current rule in football, surely now punching someone in the guts has to be stronger than a fine.
Yeah. Well, I was disappointed in that. Don't even let them judge you on that. Don't even let the football world or the umpires or the judicial system even have a look at that and be able to question you. I heard Tom Morris say this last night. I think it was on Fox. He said, I don't know if there was enough force in it. So whatever the definition of what a punch is... I don't know where that currently sits. I wouldn't be completely against it if he gets a week because we've spoken about this, Toby. You know the rules. As much as I just said I love you playing on the edge, that's not the edge. That's not the tough stuff and the courageous stuff and the inspirational stuff that we love about you. So I wouldn't be completely against it if he got a week out of it. If it's a fine, I can get that as well.
Well, it's where our priorities have got to be at, hasn't it? Removing non-football acts from the game before we go after football acts.
Yeah.
That's a conversation... for another day.
Do you think, so you asked Mick before, do you think that the Giants make the finals?
Yeah, I had them in the 8 at the start of the year.
Okay.
Who do they jump? Well, so Sydney's probably the sitting duck?
I think so.
Or the sitting swan, however you want to put it.
Oh, I'll put this to you, Mick. So of their remaining games, they've got 5 teams that are currently in the top 8, which might be a good thing, which says, hey, you've got an opportunity to leapfrog these teams. You've got to beat those teams on that particular day. The teams outside of the Hawks, the Suns, the Dons and the Blues, they get again.
The Dons win today, they're a game from the 8. Makes it interesting.
This was Leon Cameron on Toby Green.
Cam, I was coming down the lift, so I actually didn't see it. And then someone just informed me just then that he kicked the barrel just on quarter time. So, look, he's a wonderful player. He's had a wonderful year. And he's a great leader of our footy club. And, he's letting his footy do the talking, but equally marshalling up the troops along with Finlinson. I thought Finlinson had a really good, strong say in the match with his, not just his clear ability to score, but his leadership was, there on show, and which is quite hard for him because he's a quite young, introverted young fellow, and I thought he really led the charge. But, yeah, Toby's had a wonderful year, and, I mean, those things that, those brilliant things that he can do, no doubt they, they pop up every week.
Were you surprised at all by the report against him for striking Newman in the third quarter?
again, I've just been informed when I was walking in, so I haven't seen the incident, but I will say that I think, you know, Toby's in the last couple of years has gone a long way to tidying up a lot of those things. And, you know, when I have a look at it later on tonight or tomorrow, I'd be really surprised if there was anything in it. He's really, you know, tidied up in that area and let his footy do the talking and let his leadership do the talking. So, you know, I'm not too concerned about it, but, you know, making sure that he keeps addressing all the areas of his game and what he can improve on.
Leon Cameron, as we close out the first hour. So, Toby Green, just a yes or no, top five player in the comp?
Yes.
Yes, and I'm worried that Leon Cameron didn't see any of yesterday's game.
And he may have mispronounced
it. I reckon he saw it.
Did he mispronounce his own player's name?
He did.
Oh, Leon. How
racing, isn't it?
And that's just how important the coaches. They're not important at all. Who cares? Just leave it to the players.
That was all for Autobahn. Top Gear, low prices, race into Autobahn by June 30. That was Sunday crunch time. Still plenty more, though, as we gear up for the Hawks and the Dons. Brought to you by the 3-litre Isuzu D-Max, born to play.